This is Henrik Palmgren, and welcome to these strange and hysteric times of June 2012, a time when people seem to be losing it to the left and to the right. You are listening to Red Ice Radio, and today we have John B. Wells with us. He is the Saturday night host of Coast to Coast AM, the most listened to overnight radio program in North America. He is a veteran radio host and voice actor with credentials ranging from radio stations and TV shows to movies and advertisements on all seven continents. We are going to talk with John about the quality of the time, mob mentality, media brainwashing, false messages of hope and equality. Wells talks about the looming police state as police are becoming more brutal, protests are being silenced, and weapons are becoming more advanced. What is the future of America and the rest of the world? Stay with us for more. Right, here we are. Great to have you with us, John. Welcome to Red Ice Radio, and thank you for taking some of your time here to speak with us today. How are you, John?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. And it was a pleasure to have you on Coast to Coast AM a few weeks ago. A very good response, and virtually everyone enjoyed it. Every email that I got was positive, and that's really unusual.
Well, there you go. That's interesting. Very nice. It was very nice being on as well, so thank you for the invite, of course, and I want to get you on our program as well and see what's on your mind. I mean, as I've said to you here before, the recording began here, we are wading through so many different topics. We're wading through so much information when you're doing this and interviewing all kinds of different people from all walks of life, and there's just so much, you know, out there. And I want to get into some of the, I guess, favorite topics of yours here today. But I thought in the beginning, though, for people who might not be familiar with you, I think most are, though, obviously, because you are the Saturday night host on Coast to Coast AM, the biggest, I think, radio program on these kinds of topics at all. So I don't think it will come to you're a newcomer, if I put it that way. But you're a voice artist, basically. You got that deep, nice radio voice. You've been an announcer. You've been featured in movies like Oliver Stone's JFK. You've been on tons of different radio channels across America and the world, the BBC over in the UK and such. But I'm curious, tell us, how did Coast to Coast happen for you, John?
Well, I must confess that if I'm to give you a truthful answer to this, I had... you've heard the expression, I'm tired of singing to myself in the car, so somebody decides to make an album. I've spent two or three decades, you know, I started when I was about 5 years old, that's a joke, just doing these various projects for people. I worked for several television stations that were promoting news stories, and over the years I began to notice the spin, the slant that they put on their stories. And so I very quietly just began to accumulate information as to how this happens, because it's one thing that you hear, we're number one, we're the best, get all your news from us. But then when you see that these stories are biased to some degree, you just store that away. So after I'd had enough, I contacted an old friend that I hadn't seen in 20 years, and just arranged a lunch with him. And he was, and still is, with Premier Radio Networks. And I told him what my situation was, and I'm spending my life in a studio, and of course I'm delighted to make a living at this, but I don't really feel like I'm doing anything but taking. And I seem to have a reputation of saying things out loud that other people are thinking, but in the interest of diplomacy and now this politically correct thing, which I suppose is the same thing, I prefer diplomacy to the catchphrases, maybe even discretion, I thought, and I just asked him, if you were in my position, what would you do? And I just wanted to get an idea. I wasn't asking for advice, just an idea. And he said, well, I'd take it to the air. And I said, well, I'm going to need some help with that. And so he put me in contact with a man that had worked with him for a number of years. And they arranged a guest hosting on Coast to Coast AM back in 2005.
Oh, that early, huh?
So,
yeah, there you go.
Oh, yes. But the reviews were good, but I didn't come back until maybe once in 06. And then I didn't hear from them for a couple of years. And in 2008, I was privileged to interview the great visionary and writer Ray Bradbury. And then in 2009, a show here and a show there. In 2010, a show here and a show there. But then in 2011, they began calling me more frequently. And by the time that 2011 was drawing to a close, they asked if I would take the Saturday night position. I said, of course, I'd be delighted to do this. And so now, in addition to doing the regular Saturday night hosting, for example, this weekend I'll do Saturday and Sunday, and next week I'll do Friday and Saturday. So it's becoming more frequent. And while I started out trying to be I really thought that my presentation would be more of gentlemanly sort with an acumen for the arcane, the neoteric, and just occasionally brushing against the controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it hasn't really gone that way. Now it's like, here's a controversial topic, give it to Wells. I don't want to touch it. Which, of course, I'm delighted to take those projects.
Well, that's an honor. That's a good place to be, isn't it, in a way?
Well, it really is, because I just have to be careful not to go too far with it, because I like for it to be the things that I say to be acceptable to my creator, number one, which may be a little bit of a stretch for some. Some are probably rolling their eyes now going, oh, God, he's a southerner and he's a right-wing religious nut. It's like, no, I'm not, but I'm also not a proponent of, we've discovered a flying saucer and a pyramid, but there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that anybody actually built it, so we can just assume that it burst into existence on its own. Not one of those either. And I want to make sure that it's factually based in as much as that is possible, especially when you're discussing evolving issues and situations like we have here in the United States with the ever-increasing police state mentality that seems to be not only developing but also sanctioned by our elected representatives.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And stay away from so much opinion until it's time for an opinion, and then clearly indicate that this is an opinion, and it certainly doesn't represent necessarily the views of Premier or the station that they're hearing this information over.
That's right. Is that a important step, to make that little disconnection between there? Because, I mean, obviously, you guys are on on major mainstream channels across America, and as we know, a few years ago, there was this little debacle when the White House put pressure on certain radio networks to, stop playing certain songs because of the fact that they were critical, I guess, of the Bush administration. They were critical of the Iraq war. So there is that. I mean, they even went so far as, was it the Dixie Chicks? No objection from me there, I guess. But, to ban their music is kind of stupid. They did this because they were outspoken and critical of the current, administration in that sense. So is this an area that is still kind of sensitive for you guys depending on what topics you talk about?
It is, and only to the extent that, it's well known all over the world, I'm sure, regardless of the culture, the nation, the country, or the religious bent of whomever you're speaking of. Religion and politics are the two most polarizing elements that could ever be discussed. And so some sensitivity has to be employed in talking about these things, but I don't think it should. I don't think that there's a subject that should not be discussed. I really don't.
Yeah.
If it offends some, that's fine. Now you don't want to just gratuitously offend people. You don't want to deliberately alienate people. But if that happens as a result of something that one says over the air that's factually based, well, then so be it. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
As we do.
That's right. Well, this is a pretty important point, I think, because we have ended up, I feel, in a way, more and more now in our culture where people are getting more and more touchy about things that offend them, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to, as you say, just talk about things. And I've never understood what the problem is with that. If something comes across the airwaves or somewhere else where I don't like to hear it for whatever reason, I take that as a challenge to question myself and my own belief. Okay, why is this difficult to hear? Why am I against it, etc.? You question your own beliefs instead of just putting your fingers in your ears and saying, I don't want to hear this. So it's a very pretty strange response to me, isn't it, John?
Yes, it is. But, Henrik, I think it, if this is the correct phraseology, I think that very syndrome is indicative of just a general shift in mentality. I have noticed that criminals are more vicious. People are more easily offended. It seems as though every emotion, particularly the ones that are potentially negative emotions, anger and jealousy and avarice for sure, just seem to be ramping up. I think this started a long time ago. I remember all the way back to the 70s, there was this thing about, oh, you didn't read him his Miranda rights, therefore he's going to walk away from this murder charge. Oh, you shouldn't have said that because you've now alienated an entire group. Well, there are a couple of components there. Number one, there's an individual mentality, and there's a group mentality, and then, of course, there's a mob mentality. So when somebody says you've alienated an entire group, how is this even possible for one individual to alienate an entire group? Mm-hmm. Is there no sympathy among any members of this group? It just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
So it's almost as though all of the unpleasant attributes of human nature have somehow been intensified, and I think it's quite probably by design. Before you can hook anybody on drugs, what do you have to do? You have to get them to take some of it. Before you can hook anybody on pornography, what do you have to do? You have to get them to see some of it. So when a society is continually bombarded with murder, rape, betrayal, mayhem, and so forth, after a while, I believe that particularly those who are not aware that there's a huge brainwashing component in the media, I believe that their brains become somewhat washed of their old thoughts and new thoughts put into their heads, which, if not in the courtroom, certainly individually, can be justified. And then you get enough of these people like this, and now you've got a problem.
Is that where we're at right now? More and more of these people are, are they rising to the top, or are there just more of them out there, I guess? I don't know.
I think it's both. I think the people who are running things now, the phrase is money is the root of all evil. Well, that's not the phrase. The phrase is the love of money is the root of all evil. And so now the mentality is, it seems to me, get all you can while you can, because soon there may be nothing. But, of course, what they forget is that if your currency becomes worthless, then what good is that huge pile of money? And you're going to have some explaining to do to all of the people that you that you took advantage of to get that big pile of money at some point.
Yeah.
I think much of this is done, frankly, Henrik, I think much of this is done out of vanity, plain and simple. People who have money, they think of themselves, and that's not to say that everybody is like this, because there's a lot of philanthropy out there. It's a lot easier to do something good for the world if you have a few bucks to throw around. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people have decided that, well, I have this and I have that, so therefore I am in a position of authority over you. And not only that, but I have a lot of my fellows who also have lots of things and money and influence, and together we make a regular juggernaut. And that's why you have people like the kids of today, that they're really stuck between the way things ought to be and the way things are. And the way things ought to be is that everyone should have a chance. Everyone should have a chance to rise above their circumstance and improve their lives, and maybe even contribute to a society as a whole. But the way things are is that known or unknown, spoken or unspoken, people are being restricted, and they're being restricted by those who already have power. I mean, I think this is well known, but just not ever present in one's consciousness.
That's right. I don't think it's present in the majority's consciousness quite yet, anyway. It's beginning to come up there in one way or another, considering the protest. We're seeing that there is discontent with what is happening in that sense. But it's a difficult area as well, because we're talking about things like equality. We're talking about things of, creating equal, basically, circumstances for everybody so that they can, do what they want to do with their life, the time that they have here. And as soon as you begin that, there's also the other side of the argument where you can begin questioning that where there is, kind of like the things we talked about when I was on Coast, the redistribution of wealth. We're talking about making it equal for everybody. And in that kind of egalitarian utopia, there is another kind of oppression, present in a system like that. So is there a balance between these systems of sorts, do you think, John?
I think that there is a balance, but I think that what people must remember at all times is that equality is, if it is attainable, it is not something that you truly want to attain, because in my world, my view of the world is that equality, everybody just like everybody else, is exactly the same thing as being nobody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We must take risks. For example, when this was just all the rage in the 90s, that the children, when they're playing their games, their baseball games and so forth, we don't keep score, because that way everybody wins. It's like, everybody loses.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it's like, well, Wells, are you a pessimist? The glass is half empty, or the glass is half full? It's like, well, both in that case. But that's not really a proper analogy. I mean, we're not talking about a glass of water or orange juice. We're talking about human development. And I don't know, I sense a desperation among people and in general, and I think the big disconnection is that there is no code to live by. There is no philosophy that can be embraced. When I say something that has any comment can be traced to a religious source, particularly a Christian source, inevitably I'll get an email from an atheist who says that they're offended. And it's like, well, if you're offended and you're an atheist and you don't believe in it, why do you care?
Mm.
I mean, yeah. We might as well be talking about, we could be talking about anything that doesn't exist. So you have to ask yourself, why are you so offended, and why is your response so vehement?
Exactly, and there's no, it doesn't matter. When one opens one's mouth and voice an opinion, there will always be someone who disagree. There's no such thing as win-win in that situation. If you begin to have opinions, then people are going to think otherwise. But as again, to get back to that point you mentioned before, it feels like the quality of the time that we're in right now and the quality of people is that's on a different level. People are very touchy. It's very, very difficult for people to accept the fact that, okay, I think differently from this person, that's fine, and then drop it. Now it's like there needs to be not even a discussion about it. It needs to be like an attack on the individual that deviates, from the other individual's opinion about whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. And, as you said, when one is in controversial areas, like both you and me are, then that becomes even more clear, I think. It's very difficult there. But, I don't know. I don't think it's a problem, ultimately. I think it's people should change their maybe relationship to the information they're listening to, or just realize that, okay, it's fine. People can have another opinion than me. It's not the end of the world, basically.
Well, you know, I'm not exactly a student of Aleister Crowley, you know, the magician guy.
Right.
But, I read a good bit of everything. I may not finish the entire volume, but I'll study a little of it until I get what I want out of it, and then I'll move on. But he made a comment in one of his books that every day a person's mind is filled with thoughts of the past, conversations that they've had, relationships that they've had, events that they've been a part of, things that have happened to them, and so forth. And I think we do a good bit of acting like the parrot. We hear something, and then we repeat it. If it sounds good to us, sometimes just if it just sounds good, there's no real substance there once you look at it, but it sounds good. It sounds plausible. Well, a lot of times people just take that, they take it to heart, and it becomes part of their permanent component of their thinking, which, of course, is very dangerous. And it's interesting what you said about someone says something and then that individual is attacked. I mean, for the longest time, it seemed to me that, Patrick McGoohan when he did his Prisoner series,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own. The right of the individual to be individual. But now it seems as though people are afraid of individuality. They need the comfort of a group. Not only physically, but a group mentality. Now, I may be wrong, but it seems that way. For example, when Barack Obama became president here, he campaigned on hope and change. I mean, the Germans were writing operas about him. Street people were like, we're going to get change. We have hope. But my question was, what are you hoping for?
Yeah, precisely.
So, yeah. But they all got on the bandwagon by countless millions, and we see what's happened.
Well,
nothing.
It's exactly nothing has happened, and it's a basic projection from the wordsmiths at the top on the political level. They know exactly what words to use to make people project. I mean, it's a fill in the blanks kind of situation, you know. Whatever you want, we got it. We have the change that you envision, you know. But if it's undefined, it will be what everybody think it's going to be. Fantastic. Let's go. I mean, it's so simple, you'd think, but apparently not. 2012, or when was he elected? 2008, I guess, 9. But we're still not getting it, are we, really?
No, we're not. You know, I spoke with a scientist, and I can't remember who it was at this moment, on the program on Coast to Coast. And I said, now, is this the way scientific achievement is accomplished? It's like somebody's playing around in their lab. I mean, and they produce an effect. In other words, nobody says, I'm going to invent a fluorescent light tube. I know what I'll do. I'll get a vacuum inside of a long glass tube, and the inside of that tube will be coated with powder, and then I'll put a little DC, a little transformer there, and I'll run a charge through it, and we'll have fluorescent light. Or is it somebody was fooling around, and they went, wow, look at that. And then they decide, you know what? We could probably make a lighting instrument out of this. And the scientist said, well, that's precisely what happens. You know, you have the experiment and its result first, and then you apply it to some sort of an invention or mm-hmm. a device of some sort.
Right.
That seems to be what's happening socially as well. I mean, and this may be just slightly obtuse, but what I mean by that is, yes, you must protest. Yes, you must go out there and you must demand a redress of grievances and so forth. But now, the police, for example, police in Chicago decided to just disappear, as they say. I don't know. That's become a noun now, a verb. They're making these protesters go away before they even have a chance to protest. So all of these ideas swirling around serve to produce an effect, which is polarization. And then, of course, the invention is, how can we control this?
Mm-hmm.
And the methods of control are becoming more and more brutal. And the police forces are becoming more and more brutal. And we've seen this before. But human beings have short memories. They don't understand things that have happened throughout history that were devastating to people who had little or if anything to do with the oppressive movement. They were just victims of it. Mm-hmm. Or as I like to say, in every war, it's always the wrong people who get killed.
It's just amazing. And we have, well, it is today at the time of this recording, anyway, that we have the first NATO week, you know, weekend here, ramping up to the meeting in Chicago. Have you been watching anything of the news so far about this, John?
Oh, yes. I see there are armed drones over over Chicago even now. And again, people are being detained. They ask for warrants, and there isn't one. They demand a warrant, and so one is produced, but there's no judge's signature on the warrant. I mean, it is becoming just an absolute laissez-faire police state. And if this is allowed to continue, it's going to be very, very ugly here. We're still trying to figure out why the Department of Homeland Security needed 450. That was the first figure that I heard, was 450 million. And, you know, the stories always get bigger as time goes by, but mm-hmm. I've heard numbers as high as 600 million rounds of just pistol ammunition with the hollow point bullet,
yes.
which they claim is for training purposes. But everybody knows you don't train with expensive ammo. You train with inexpensive ammo, and hollow point ammunition is not inexpensive. They've also ordered tens of thousands of bullet-resistant checkpoint booths with stop-and-go lights. And so I don't know if it's because they anticipate a civil unrest or a natural disaster or an unnatural disaster like this thing in Fukushima. I don't know what their motivation is, but I do know what they are doing. And as far as the NATO summit is concerned, I wonder why they picked Chicago to hold this summit.
What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know, but that doesn't seem a very likely town to host this event, and the residents around the in a pretty good radius around the meeting point for the summit, they've been told to stay in your house, don't come out. In mm-hmm. fact, don't even be here. In fact, why don't you go on vacation?
Get out of town.
What kind of
yeah.
mentality is this?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just uncivilized.
Well, we know that Obama's from Chicago. Well, he was there in a while, right? And the former senator of Illinois, I think, right? And then Rahm Emanuel is the mayor currently of Chicago. That could have something to do with it. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's entirely possible. In fact, I think it's likely. That's kind of where I was headed.
Yeah. Interesting. So how – it's very – I've been watching this, and they also have – I just heard the news about the there's Camp David is involved here as well, because they had two things going at the same time that was intended to be in Chicago, the G8 meeting, I think, and the NATO meeting at the same time. But I think that they were split off in one way, and one is being held in another location now, if I'm not mistaken. In any regard, there's a heck of a focus right now currently on these things. So if we look at the future a little bit here of the United States of America, where it's heading and how quick things could go, as you've alluded to here. We have weird things being bought. We're talking ammunition, things like the body bags, was it instant, these one-time frozen pack meals in the millions that were being bought up by FEMA. There are these rumors about the plastic coffins, or whatever we want to call them, dispersed around. What is going on, in your opinion? What is this something to come? Is it preparation just if or in case? Or how conspiratorial can we get about this, do you think, John?
I think we can get very conspiratorial about it. Look, after a while, there was this movie called The Third Miracle, and Ed Harris was a priest, and he was struggling with his faith, and he drank a bunch that night and talked to one of the bishops or something, and he said, you know, Al, if we die and nothing's there, we're going to look like a couple of real jerks, you know what I mean? So I'll run the risk of coming off like a real jerk, just somebody who just doesn't know what he's talking about or anything else. But once these conspiracy theories are investigated and you see symptom after symptom after symptom, they cease to be conspiracy theories, and it becomes the foundation for a genuine conspiracy. Now, why the G8 is being held at Camp David, that seems like an extraordinarily wrong place to hold that summit, and yet it's not surprising given the attitude of the current administration. All of this stuff, the thing, everything seems to be ramping up, ratcheting up in intensity and even desperation, because people are becoming aware, which means that if they were going to use a hammer before to make us comply, in their desperation, they will use an even larger hammer, and in fact, they may use one that's just unnecessarily large. I think that they are desperate to initialize their final endgame. I really do. And what's really and what's driving it is money and control. For example, the FBI just released, this has been a week or so ago, they're saying, turn in your Bin Ladens. Well, we used to call the $100 bill the Benjamin, because mm-hmm. Franklin's picture's on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's turn in your Bin Ladens, because cash is the currency of drug traffickers and terrorists. I mean, who would believe such a thing? And in fact, even, now this is a little bit of a stretch, but they say even buying your coffee with cash every day.
Oh, God.
Could put you on some sort of a watch list. I mean,
mm-hmm.
these things are just ridiculous. But there's this thing that I have, Henry, called Wells' theory of compulsory collapse. You take a thing, whatever it is, a society, an automobile, whatever, and you improve it, and you improve it, and you improve it, and you improve it until the point where it cannot be improved anymore, and it just collapses.
Mm-hmm.
Because once it's been improved to the point where it can no longer be improved, it becomes useless and it's supplanted by something else. I mean, we were stuck on having two wings on our airplanes and stacks, biplanes, and piston engines. But that's not what we haul passengers around. Those are not the types of aircraft now. They're just amusements now.
Yeah.
That's not what we haul passengers all over the world in. So no one's building any new biplanes or any rotary engines anymore. That thing was developed as far as it could be, and then it was abandoned. And that could very well be what's happening with our societies and the philosophical structure behind these societies. People continue to say that the United States is a democracy. A democracy. Well, it's not a democracy. Democracy is majority rule.
Mob rule, as you mentioned before. Yeah.
That's absolutely it, and because it's almost like the parallel would be a king. If you have a good king, well, then you've got a lifetime of a king's lifetime of a good life. But if it's a bad king, then you don't. So, if you have 51% are really smart, kind people, and 49% are the other, well, then maybe a pretty good life can be made for everybody. However, if it's the other way around, then the 51% who actually were benevolent and altruistic and so forth, they're going to be at the mercy of the 51% who are, you know, ugly and mean and self-interested. So that is why people don't even understand in this country what a constitutional republic is. What it means is it defends us from the tyranny of the majority because, yes, you are in the majority. Yes, you can move things along your way, but it must be done in accordance with this Constitution. You may not go outside the boundaries of this Constitution. It's not permitted. Well, our current president has pretty much said, it doesn't really matter what Congress says. It doesn't really matter what the Supreme Court says. One executive order after another. And it's completely wrong. And I'll make a prediction right now that unless something really, really ugly and catastrophic socially happens in this country, I believe that a Barack Obama will be defeated worse than Jimmy Carter was. Because I think people are waking up. And that U.S. District Judge in Manhattan that ruled that this indefinite detention. Can you imagine such a thing, Henry?
Yeah, I know.
Being arrested by the Army guy, show up at your house, come in, arrest you, no phone call, no lawyer, no charge, no one has any idea where you are, and they can hold you indefinitely.
Yeah.
That such a thing could happen in this country to me is just unfathomable.
It's gone so quick, though, hasn't it? It's gone incredibly quick.
Yes, it is.
Down the drain, yeah.
Well, there are a lot of people that are not going to stand for it.
That's true.
And so
is that what they want? Though, is this a strategy of tension? You begin to tighten the noose so hard that eventually those few people who still have the means, the willpower, the intention to say no, to stand up against this, they are the ones who are going to be outed because of this process, and hence being taken out, if you will, or taken away, or re-educated in the camps, you know, around the country. I mean, this is things we've seen in Europe, you know, hundreds of years ago in some countries even thousands of years ago, and it's very disheartening to see it. But what do you make of it? Is this the is that the strategy in a way to make people you know, lose it, to piss people off in a way, to draw them out of the woodworks in a way?
I'm not going to say that I believe that is the intention, but I will say that it would not surprise me if that were the intention. Certainly, it's been discussed. Now, whether or not it's being implemented, I don't have any proof of that yet, but I'm looking for proof. Mm-hmm. If I see some, I'll sing out about it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, it's the best of times and it's the worst of times. We're seeing social unrest on many different levels. Occupy, we mentioned it before. We talk about it quite a bit, and we should, I think, because it is evidence of something, at least a will and intention to demonstrate to the powers that be that you know, we are not happy, etc. But at the same time, I can also see how it is being used. I can see how it is being used eventually, maybe potentially down the road, of you know, partially bringing in this eradication, John, that you mentioned before, of individuality, moving America, socializing America, moving it more towards a you know, collectivist ideology, and that's something I would think a lot of Americans would be against, right?
I would hope that they would be. I think that many of them will be against it who do not currently know that they are against it, and they won't know it until they've had a good taste of it. But I don't know. I was going to offer a little something, but I've lost my thought on it. But I'll come back to it.
No problem. It's exactly. It's a little just weird, though. Do you think that people have to live through it to be able to know that it was not a good path to go down? Shouldn't we be able to look at history, though, and just say, well, actually, we tried that, and that's not a great idea, so let's move ahead, right?
Well, yes. I mean, people are still talking communism, and we saw what happened in the Soviet Union. There was an outrageously high alcoholism rate because there was no reason to want to do anything unless the government said, say, you're smart according to your test studies, your test scores. We want you to come and work on some stuff. But other than that, if you were just a plain working stiff, as we refer to it here, there was no motivation for you to do anything other than put in your time. And then just putting in your time became tiring. And so what do? You do something to numb your pain. Human beings want freedom, but they don't want. But they also want discipline. Over here, I sardonically remark from time to time, we're just so free over here that we're running around killing each other, and that's true. There needs to be some discipline. No one likes to be told what to do, but everyone enjoys being disciplined. And if you have no discipline, You can't be happy with your life. You don't have to be proud of your life, but you can be happy with it. You can understand that, yes, you know, you can, at the end of the road, you can look back on a life well spent and work well done. I mean, what is it that we expect to get as human beings from this very short lifetime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't last that long.
I think most people don't even ever ask themselves that question, which is fundamental to be able to steer the life in the direction that you want it to go.
Well, and who is providing a code to live by? When you're continually bombarded with things that make you jealous, make you envious of other people, you know, whether it's a car or the clothing, it's like, oh, you wear these sunglasses, smoke these cigarettes, and drive this car, and you'll get a woman that looks like this. It's like, well, maybe you will and maybe you won't. But if you show that to people enough times and they're not getting those things, what happens then? Then they get angry. And then if they see someone who appears to have those things, then what? Then they don't like that person. So there are a number of ways. You know, this is why, and I understand the audience that we're reaching here, but I got to tell you, this is why I go back to the New Testament, where it says, don't worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear or worry about this or worry about tomorrow. First of all, I mean, I'm paraphrasing big time here.
Right.
Tomorrow, today, there's enough troubles to deal with today. Don't worry about tomorrow at all. In fact, don't worry about anything, because if you worry about things, then that means that you mistrust your Creator who is running things for you. Well, why does this happen? Why do these disasters happen? It's because it doesn't matter really how we die. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a hurricane or a soap chip in the bathtub or a banana peel on the sidewalk or a car. It doesn't matter. These things are sad, and we're always sad when we lose somebody. I mean, we shed tears for people we don't know, which is proof that all men are brothers and sisters. But when you consider we shed tears for people we don't know, what does that tell you? That we're all one. So it doesn't matter what you wear or all of these things are going to come to you, but get your head in the right place first. Have an appreciation for the fact that you are alive, that no one gets away with a perfect life. Some will be stronger, some will be faster, but the ones who are not as strong or not as fast physically are stronger and faster mentally, and we help each other. This doesn't mean that we have to go around with just this continuous feeling of humanity and altruism at all times.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But you know what? There are worse things to feel as you walk around. You know, somebody said the measure of a man is a man, woman, whatever. Because you use man as a catchphrase for anybody who's going, well, you're just talking about men. You're leaving the women out. No.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the women are stronger and smarter in a lot of areas, don't you? But the measure of a person is how they treat another person
mm-hmm.
who has nothing to offer them. They have nothing to offer them, but you treat them well anyway. So anyway,
yeah, no, there's
my momentary philosophical rant.
Very good. I think you're touching upon some very important points there when it comes to the need, I guess, in society, or of I don't know if it is the majority of the, or if it's a select few that are manipulating the majority, but in regard to this conformity of thought and opinion that is out there right now is very, very discouraging to me. It also almost extends to the material level, as you said before. It's like a preset default, setting that everybody should have and will receive upon entry into the earthly life, and then everything shall be lived according to these rules and standards and stuff like that. There is already, as you said, conformity. We're on this planet on one big ball together. We are connected in that way already. I don't see the need for furthering, limiting people's ability, and narrowing the perspective, narrowing the range that we have when it comes to thinking what we want to think or look how we want to look, what have you. And I just don't understand that drive of people to create this conformity. And again, it goes against what you mentioned before with the individuality thing as well, that these two are like in opposition to each other now. And individuality is at this stage in the game and partially because of the economy, partially because of the so-called capitalist system as well, that people think, look at what happens in a country like the United States when they have free market capitalism. I mean, you really don't have the system, and that could be debated by itself, but that's what's being projected onto the rest of the world. Look what happens when it runs amok. We can't have it this way. Therefore, we have to have rules. We have to have regulations. We have to have more control. And as you said, cashless, it's just non-ending after that point. But it's very it's very, very difficult as well and dangerous what kind of rules we set up, because either we have freedom or we don't. There's no such thing as a little bit of freedom. Either we have it or we don't. And we have to make that choice, I think. Is it dangerous to live in a society where everybody is completely free? Yeah, it is. There won't be 100% security in a system like that. There won't be any guarantees, but there never are anyway, not under whatever rule or system you live under. Thoughts on that, John?
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, security, there is no security. The security is an illusion. There are measures you can take, but against someone who is determined to overcome these security measures, whatever they are, whether it's identity theft or whether it's separating you from your money, there are many ways to separate a person from their money. You can just you can do it emotionally, you can do it physically, and you can do it underhandedly when they're not looking. You can just steal it. It's you know, I keep going back to this one thing. I don't know if you've experienced this, but I don't remember anything before I was born. However, I seem to get a glimpse of it every once in a while. And it usually occurs when I'm in a large auditorium with a lot of people, and it's some sort of an occasion where the lights are lowered down and everyone is just asked to just have a moment, maybe a minute or 2 minutes of silence. I don't know if you've experienced that, but when you're in a huge crowd of people and the lights go down where you can't really see each other, but you know that you're part of several thousand people, and you just sit there quietly, don't you feel a contentment and the togetherness that you just don't feel when you're out in traffic driving among the cars, mm-hmm. where it's every man and every woman for himself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is humanity. But you know, human beings have to have that component of opposition. Now, I'm just too happy. I got to shake something up. Some people feel compelled to create problems just because they're so bored with their success, they want to create a problem so they'll have something to occupy their mind, something to overcome, some challenge. And it's like, well, what did you go and do a thing like that for? It's like, well, I can't really confess this to you, but the fact is I was bored and I just wanted to shake things up. And when you're up on the higher tiers of society to where you're running things and the decision that you make can affect literally the lives of people,
yeah.
whether or not they even have a life or not, don't you imagine it'd be quite tempting to play around a little bit with that power?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Tempting, yeah.
You know,
for them.
The biggest problem is that that we have just abandoned ethics. Ethics, that's the stuff of milk toasts and, you know, would-be do-gooders. And, you know, we know everybody's dirty. So it's like, what is this person trying to do? Are they trying to come off like some sort of a benevolent angel of some sort? It's like there's a natural cynicism in people that makes them resist, even more so as time goes by, resist anything that looks like, no, we're going to guide our people, our nations, into a positive mentality. But I got to tell you, just changing gears very quickly, I'm very disappointed in the direction that this country has taken.
Mm-hmm.
The United States was not even a world power until after World War II. But these things that are happening now were designed and set into motion a long time ago. So you have to. It just prompts the question, why?
Going
back to this thing about.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, John, how far back do you think we need to go? I want to, you know, begin to round things up here for the first hour in a little bit. We're going to carry on in the next one. But let's finish up on this thought here. I think it's very interesting. How far back do we need to go to see the plan of America being unfolded or created?
Well, I have to answer that question this way. Anybody who studies acting is going to study Greek theater. Why? Because the stories never change. Never change. But at least the Greeks had enough sense to put masks on people so that you don't go, well, I like the wicked evil girl. She's really pretty, so it doesn't matter if she's bad. She looks great. They put masks on the people to disguise this. So I would say that this plan has been in motion since civilizations came into existence. the thing with the civilization being that you give up a little bit of your individual freedom for the benefits of the collective population within the civilization. So to answer your question, I think we could look back at least to the 1700s, maybe even the early 1600s, mm-hmm. when this country was like the last great big, excluding South America, which is still under development, and we don't know much about them. We just know that economies like Brazil and the spirit of liberty and entrepreneurship is very strong in countries like Brazil.
Yeah.
But in countries like Colombia, where you have these and other countries down there that have problems with powers vying for superiority among them, among each other, that's a different deal, and that's obviously all about money and power. Also, I think we can go all the way back to the beginning of recorded history. The only thing that I can say would be the exception, there's this wonderful book by Sir James George Frazer called The Golden Bough, B-O-U-G-H. And it was basically the discussion of the ascension to the priesthood at the Grove of Diana at Aricia.
Mm-hmm.
If you became king, you were selected, and you had a really, really easy life, and you stayed in this grove. And if anybody wanted to mess with the people, they would mess with you. If they defeated you, well, then they would become king, but you left the people out of it. That is probably the best system of government possible. But again, in these wars that we have, it's not the right people who get eliminated, it's the wrong people who get eliminated. It's the people who have no power over their circumstance. They're victims of their circumstance. And with the exception of what happened at the end of World War II, do we know of any other time when all of the leaders were just summarily executed? Boom, every 10 minutes, another one down there in the gymnasium at Nuremberg.
Yeah, but even there, John, a lot of people were shipped out both to America and some to Russia, I think, the paperclip project.
You got a little bit of my thunder there. Yeah. Martin Bormann was one of them. It's entirely possible Adolf Hitler got out also.
That's right, yeah.
So,
interesting.
There we are.
And that takes us back. You mentioned 1600s and 1700s, Francis Bacon, the ideas of the New Atlantis. Shortly after that, we have Benjamin Franklin coming along as well. We might talk a little bit more about that in the next segment. John, if you're up for that, I think we are having a really interesting conversation here, and I do want to carry it on here in the next one. But I do want to talk a little bit about the websites, obviously, coasttocoastam.com. That's the website for the excellent radio show. And John hosts, obviously, on Saturdays and then the occasional Friday and Sunday as well, as things are right now, and you guys who are potential newcomers to that program. If you are, you're probably haven't been into it so long, but in that regard, you can sign up there on the website to get full access to the archives and stuff right there. Really good stuff, and you can tune in live if you're in the States as well. Do you broadcast to other countries as well, as far as you know, John, live?
Yes, if they go to the coasttocoastam.com website and they click on stations, it'll show a number of them, and many of these stations offer a free streaming service. So
I get
email from all over Eastern Europe, all over Western Europe, Asia, South America, all over the place.
Excellent.
So it's becoming quite international, quite cosmopolitan.
That's right. Well, it's really good. It's what is happening with the web and everything else going out online. Then you have you have your own individual or personal website as well, John, caravan2midnight.com, caravan2midnight.com. Tell us a little bit about that website.
Well, that website is a little bit like when Mr. Howard Hughes confessed that his great big airplane with the eight engines that he called the Hercules, that Senator Brewster nicknamed the Spruce Goose, it probably would have been a lot better and been finished a lot quicker if he'd like stayed out of it and just let his engineers do it. So I've gone from just a very plain site to now one that's all space and planets, and people are going, oh my gosh, this is complicated. So I've just decided to hand it over to the professionals, stay out of it, tell them what it is that I want, and let them do it. But right now, really, what I'm doing is just making available radiation detectors, two made by the Russians, a single tube and a dual tube, and then one made by Vince Mazur in Colorado that actually tracks radiation. And all we do with any money that we make from it is just buy more product, because I think this Fukushima thing is a disaster with untold consequences. But there was just a report recently that some airline flight attendants are not only getting rashes, but they're actually losing their hair. And there is a huge wave of radiation headed toward the United States. So I just want people to be able to check their food, check their water, check their building supplies, check the products that come in. And I don't want them to sit there and worry whether or not the food they're eating might be contaminated. And in the near future, I'll have, within the next couple of weeks, I'll have a program on Coast to Coast with, I'm hoping to have this a professor from University of California at Berkeley, who is a nuclear physicist, and also a doctor named Teresa Dale, who was in Europe when Chernobyl happened, did suffer radiation sickness, has overcome it, and has all kinds of techniques for ensuring that your food is clean before you eat it, and also detoxification techniques for the human body. So
really
I don't advertise anything on that website that I don't use and my family doesn't use ourselves. So it's not like I'm just got this thing up there so I can sell something. Otherwise, I'd be doing you know, work at home.
Sure.
For, you know, ads. I don't do it. So it's just water purification. And I'm adding other devices like little USB things that put a cloud over your computer so that it can't be read, because the spying over here is just absolutely out of control.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, really good. You have three up there right now, different ones. That's really good, actually, as well. Have you tried them out all for yourself? Do you know what the good stuff that you're getting there? Or?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I have I carry the little Radex units. You can just put in your pockets, about the size of the old flip cell phones. And you can just, you know, if you go into the grocery store and it crackles when you hold it by the avocados, but it doesn't crackle when you hold it by the oranges, I'd go with the oranges. You know?
that is interesting.
But
that's
I have
really
the Maser
good.
On right now. Mm-hmm. The good thing about the Maser detector is that you can just leave it on. And then you can plug it into your computer and you can track any spikes that may have occurred. It stores its information for a long time, so you can download it and study it. And you know, it doesn't take very much to learn what your background radiation is. And when you see a spike, you go, now what happened last Wednesday? That doesn't look good. And you look in the newspaper, and you go down the rabbit hole far enough, and you go, oh, yeah. Well, the winds were up that day, and it blew right into our neighborhood. Okay, that's what the deal is. So, you know, I think just being informed is some measure of security, but as we discussed, security is somewhat of an illusion, but that doesn't mean you have to just sit there and let it happen to you.
That is absolutely right. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about Fukushima here in the next segment as well. We are talking with John B. Wells, host, Saturday night host of Coast to Coast AM. And the website again there is coasttocoastam.com, and then we have caravan2midnight.com. We're going to have these linked up, of course, on redxcreations.com as well, so you can click through into them easy. Really good stuff, John. Stay with us, and we'll be back with more in a little bit. Thank you. In the second hour for our members, John comments on the American presidential election, China, the Middle East, and America's involvement in foreign matters. We'll discuss how America is being used by the bankers to further their sinister agenda. We'll also talk about the Eurozone as a New World Order test. The groundwork is being laid for a cashless society, of which Sweden has been the trendsetter. Propaganda is being spread that only criminals and terrorists carry cash. Then John discusses the importance of remembering who we are. Where the spirit goes, the mind follows. He talks about controlling our thoughts, as we can be the turning tide against tyranny. We wrap up on the Fukushima disaster. Acquire a membership at redicecreations.com to listen to the second hour if you're not already a member. This is commercial-free radio, and with a membership you'll get full access to our archives going back to our start in April of 2006. Stream or download any of our programs. We also have music, audio commentary, TV episodes, webcasts, films, video interviews, and presentations for you to enjoy as well. Next on Red Ice Radio, you'll be able to hear Peter Halldórsson from Iceland on The Measure of the Cosmos. Then we have Nora Gergadas on the Paleo Diet. After this, Britti and Tom Secker on Norway's massacre and Breivik's plan of increased polarization. Then we have Richard Grove, Winter Lake, Alex Newman, Eric Karlstrom, Janice Barcelo, Drunvalo Melchizedek, and Jordan Maxwell coming on the program. We hope to have you with us soon again. You're welcome to tune in at any time for more radio on exciting and important topics. Check out our brand new Radio 314 as well. More with John B. Wells is coming up next. Thank you for staying with us.